Hey Charlie, I understood you had a large family when you were small.
Yes, 13 of us.
That's a good amount, isn't it?
That is. And then father bought a big caravan and took to the roads. I'm talking before I were born. And he got travelling on the road, and there was, I think, two girls and three boys born. And then the war started in 1914, and he was a very headstrong father. He volunteered. We was out on the road somewhere, I think in Worcestershire, and he went, and he took him and left him on the side of the road. And he rode. She went and got pulled in a yard, you know.
Yes.
Well, he had to go, and he rode, so he volunteered before they'd take him, you know. And he went right through that, and then when he come out, mother had gone to London and got in a house she had with the children.
Yeah.
And he come back, and he couldn't stick being a traveller, he couldn't stick that. And he bought another caravan. He bought another big caravan. I'll tell you, he had that made for, it cost about £20, and that was a new one then. I can't tell you the exact date, but that's before I'm born, I'm talking about all what father's told us.
Yeah.
Anyway, we started travelling again. And then me, sister Trixie was born, and then Jessie, and then Joe. I come after Joe. I got a brother Joe. Anyway, we ended up with there were 13 of us. My brother Billy died. I lost a sister Annie out that lot. And then we started to travel. Like, I remember when I first can remember, we used to have a big caravan, and big horse in the caravan, a cider for the hills. You used to have a little yoke you took on the front of the front board to get up hills, and two on pull up, and then we had a little trolley. And because the girls couldn't sleep outside, so they used to sleep up the caravan. We had a top and bottom bunk, and then we had and father and mother used to sleep on top. And up until I was about 8, it was me, my brother Joe, my sister Trixie, and four on us. The two girls would sleep one end, me and they'd probably sleep the other end, you know. It's a bit of a kicking match, right?
Yeah.
Like, we used to sleep like that, and then when we got rode up, like, there were no room for us, so we used to either sleep on the trolley with a sheet. We used to get on this here trolley and make the bed, and then pull the sheet straight, you know, four wheel levers and dray. We used to pull the sheet right over us and snug down like that.
Yeah.
How many horses did you have then?
Well, about 7 or 8, I should think.
It was
a breeder through foals and that going along the road, and about 4 or 5 greyhounds and lead jogger dogs, you know.
Yeah.
And then when we got older, and we used to have to look after the horses outside, and then the weather used to get winter, we couldn't take the things off the trolley. We'd have to keep a lot of things dry, like the harness and everything.
Yeah.
So we had to make do with a tilt round the lock, under lock of the caravan, and the bed.
Yeah.
An oak flight bed. And we used to sleep like tops, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I woke up in the morning with an inch of snow on my head. And, you know, I didn't know it was there until I woke up. We used to be hardy as anything, and never used to have a cold. You know, I don't think I ever had a cold until I was 30.
Amazing.
That was when I got married and started to sleep on a bunk, comfortable.
Yes.
And warm. And then I began to get colds.
Yeah.
The oak flight bed you mentioned, that's from threshing?
Yeah, anybody doing a bit of thrashing, there you go up, and they'd give you a bag of oak flights if you told them it's for your horse, you know. Well, you see, we put them in with the chaff, didn't we, in the corn, like, through crushed oats and that, and give them. I used to make a lovely bed.
Mm.
I used to like it anyway. And then we used to travel from there, we used to start out of Waltham Abbey in, just in Essex, would it be?
Yes.
Just this side, we used to travel from there and come right up to Cambridge here. Cambridge over to Nuneaton. Nuneaton right over to Burnagham. Burnagham, Coventry. would zigzag like a bit. Mm. You know, and sisters, I had them, well, all my sisters, they used to, I used to make pegs and flowers. And we used to, you used to make them out of nut hazel or willow. You know, these are always your beds.
Yeah.
If you had, then if you, they'd shoot you then, but if you got caught pinching them. But if you went and seen the bloke and said, well, for about half a crown, he'd let you cut as many as you want.
Yeah.
And we used to make the pegs of a day while we were looking after the horses on the side of the road. And then the women, when we got up next morning, we'd travel through the village, they'd drop off with the pegs and the flowers. And we'd travel on and we'd tell them where we're going to bait. And we'd pull off up the edge and get a bit of wood, the old campfire going.
Yeah.
And we had one of those big iron pots like you've got now, got you in the museum.
Mm-hmm.
And Mum would buy a big piece of meat like that from the butchers, brisket or beef or something.
Yeah.
And that was set in the bottom of that pot. That's how we roasted it. Then you're roasting the pot on the fire outside.
Are you roasting?
Yeah, just like the oven. Yes, the roasting all, them old cast pots. Excuse me. And, oh, the smell of that when I used to be, you know, about 12 or 13, I couldn't wait for it, you know.
There's not much meat for a lot of you, was there?
Well, it weren't, but things were hard then, you know. I mean, it was a hard job to get a shilling, wasn't it? I mean, when you did get a shilling, it was a shilling.
Yeah.
Today, a pound ain't worth much more than 3 and 6 pence, is it?
Yeah.
To them days.
Yeah.
Anyway, we used to be very glad, and I used to sneak off with my dog, you know, and get a rabbit or two, and the other ones and all, you know, of what we could. Been shot at, I have.
Yeah,
I've been shot at the keepers. And I was a real poacher.
Talking of meat, have you ever eaten hedgehog?
Yes, and I'll tell you what. I've only ate one in my life. I think we were down in Staffordshire. And it was bad, you know, bad weather, like. And it was one of the times it rained and we couldn't get out and sell any pegs of flowers, and people wouldn't open the doors, they wouldn't open the minute and they got them banged, you know, you couldn't sell nothing. And I think that's time I took the little old dog, I had a little old dog, a five-edged dog anywhere. And it's, I don't know, we went up this edge very far and it got under a stump, you know, and started yelping, and I went and got a big old hedgehog like that. I know that to do it, because you kill a hedgehog, you hit it on the nose. As soon as it nosebleed, it's dead. It's dead in no time. And then you get a stick, got a little sticking point, shove it in its mouth, and you hold it over, you twist it over the fire, and you get a knife, and they sizzle, you scrape them. And then you cut them straight over the back like that, and open them out, and gut them and do them. And then, is you can close them up again and do them in clay. That is one way we used to do them. Bake them in clay wool, yeah. Well, I mean, my dad used to do it. And when you see, you know, it was like first having something you eat and you ain't had enough on it when you've had it.
Yeah.
It tastes so lovely, you know, they're beautiful.
Yeah.
And people say, well, I wouldn't eat a dog, they'll eat anything, they'll eat snakes. But, I mean, you look at if you eat a pig, what that'll eat.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I went, when I was working at Swavesy there, to man a lot of pigs out, I used to feed them for him and do a bit of work there. An old cat run by, go over this here rail and it slipped off in. And the old pig had it up in a second. Yeah. Had it in 3 minutes. I mean.
So.
Yeah.
What's wrong with hedgehog?
Nothing wrong with hedgehog. Lovely.
Oh.
Isn't there a story about the Pennine Chain that you can tell us?
Yeah, that would be about, I think it would be in about 1939. We was making our trip from down London to Manchester again. And it was a lovely day. Sun was shining, bit of cloud about. And Father said to me, now, children, we're just going to hit the Pennine Chain now, because he always liked telling us where we were, like. Two or three looking over the door, some walking, you know, and some sitting on the front board. I was sitting on the front board, as a matter of fact. And we, I forget, I used to know the name of the hill, but I can't tell you. There's a hill starts like that, and it goes for about half a mile. It's a long draw. But the horse could take it. And we'd started at the bottom of it, and we hadn't got a quarter way up it. And a blizzard come. That was a blizzard. It snowed. And a brick London brick lorry come along. And he come out, he said to my father, he said, "Can I help you?" He said, "Mate." He said, "I'd like to get the top of the hill." He said, "If I could, take your horses out." Then he said, he got this big van and we yoked it up in the back of this brick lorry. And he pulled us up the top of the hill. And there was a snow drift, I think, when we got up there, 10 foot deep. He said, "Well," he said, "now," he said, "I can't get any further now." He said, "Thanks very much." And this bloke went on with this big lorry. And Dad said, "I'll see if I can find a gate." And the snow was just like level. And he went and he disappeared. And then my oldest brother and Andy went looking for him. And he fell in his about 18 foot ditch he'd gone down, one of the easier steep ones. And he was hollering and swearing. Anyway, we chucked a halter down for him. And he catched hold of it and we pulled him out of his hole. And eventually, we raked along with the kettle on, and our kettle on, right along until we found a gate. Dad said, "This is it. You boys clear as much snow as you can so we can see where to pull it, caravan." Well, we call them wagons, but you call them caravan, so I'll say caravan. And we got in this here gate, and we hadn't been there 2 hours, and the snow was coming up the side of the caravan window, as you couldn't see out. Now, it's something like it is in Scotland now, I think. Anyway, we said, "This is it, we're going to starve here now," Dad said to Bob. Some of the girls started grizzling. Anyway, we see a tractor coming right across these fields. And he said, "We're going to be locked up in the bargain." He said, "There comes the farmer now." I see a farmer come. And before he could speak, my dad said, "I'll pull out soon." Ever, he said, "That's not." He said, "I'm not coming to shift you." He had 2 or 3 bales of hay on the back of his tractor. He had rice and Yorkshire puddings. "You never see a gentleman in your life." He said, "You stop here," he said. He said, "and tell the snow he's gone," he said, "and I'll look after you." And he did look after us. Yeah, you're a good man. He and when the snow did go, Dad went down to him. He said, "Well, I ain't got a lot of money to pay you." He said, "But we'll do a few days' work for you." So we done him a few days' work. He said, "There's no need to. We can go on our way." We done him a few days' work to help him, you know. Mm. That's a bloke for you, you know.
Yeah.
Marvellous.
Yeah. And then when the snow went, we went up to Manchester. Because I didn't like going there. I had to go to school when I got there. And got to my school place. You see, every time we wintered up, we got to Manchester, Waltham Cross, I used to go to school there in London. And then when I got the other end,
school again.
See, we went in a yard. Dad had to go in a yard for the winter, so the stable for the horses. And I had to go to school. And Mother used to make those, we used to make those artificial flowers then, out of crepe paper and chrysanthemums, roses. Mm-hmm. I think you remember them. I can make them now.
Yeah.
And so used to seeing them do them and Mother do them. And we used to have a trolley. You'd think it was a funeral going along, where we had it covered, you know.
Yes.
That Evesham dry, I say.
Yeah.
Cover the flowers. And I'd be more or less driver, and sisters would do all the calling. Yeah. Of course, I mean, I was a rag and bone man. If it come on, it was an old mandrel or anything, like, I was in there to either chop flowers for it or have a deal somehow.
Oh, very good.
Did you used to go where there was work, or did you used to go all over the country?
We never used to do a lot of work at all. Any time we'd done a bit of work, well, a farmer couldn't afford to pay you. I mean, it was only a farmer what had money those days, if he had 200 or 300 acres. But a farmer only had 20 or 30 acres, he couldn't afford to employ a man, could he? You know, he had to be ever so careful. Today is different, isn't it, for him? Yeah, we used to do mostly a bit of thrashing, mandolin, and sugar beet knocking and chopping. Do a lot of that. It's all died out now, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Machines for everything.
Mm. You mentioned watching your mother doing the flowers. She's still alive, I believe.
Yeah, I wanted to see her today. And she was laid down just before I got there, and she got up. She smokes twistbacker. The strongest you can get, the old Navy cut stuff, you know. You've got an old pipe about 3 or 4 inches long, nearly under her nose.
A clay?
Yeah, clay pipe. Black as coal. Well, just she, if she just blows something towards me when I'm talking to her, you know. And she don't take a bit of notice on it.
She's how old?
95.
95.
And she, we had a good old chat, you know.
Yeah.
She tried to tell me there was a big thatched cottage down the road there. Might have some scrap for me if I go to it. You know, she is still in dealing mind, like. She'd heard something.
Lovely.
Yeah.
Lovely.
Yeah. And of course, you know, I don't want to tell you, she's a fortune teller.
Really?
When she was young. Well, when I was up to about 16 or 17, she used to, we're down Essex, and she'd done one or two privately, and then they put her in these, what do they call these, garden
feats.
Feats. Yeah, they come and fetched her in a car and put her tent up. And she'd done that for two or three times, and then one day, a car come up, because a car was to me then, like, you know, was heaven. I was all round it, looking at it, you know.
Yes.
Didn't know what a car were like, but I said, but there weren't a lot about then, and like, and Mum told this here gentleman his fortune, and she, and he, well, he was a gentleman, and he was, you know, he was a gentleman's son, and he, they hadn't made good, but she told him that he was going to make good, and a date, and he told her he was going to marry a woman, and her eyes, and the colour of her hair, and her eyes, and she told him everything like that. Well, I used to think it was all bull, you know, I never took notice of that. Anyway, we went, we left there, that was in Fifield in Essex. We went there, and it was about a year or two. We went back there and with the caravans. We'd never come back. We'd gone around Scotland or Wales or somewhere. We never got over that way for a year or two. And we pulled in this here same place again, and up come a big Rolls Royce. And that is a Rolls Royce garage now, that one, I'll tell you. Here up this here, Rolls Royce pull up, and he come out. He said, "Is Mrs. Ashman about?" So father said, "Yes." He said, "She's up in caravan." He said, "Can I speak to her?" He said, "Yeah." He said, "I've not come for you to tell me fortune." He said, "You've told that once." He said. He said, "I've come to give you." And he put a tenner in her hand. Two of them big white felt put, white felt put, white and white there. I remember them, see them there.
Yes.
And he said, "Yeah." "That's for you." He said, "You're the truest one," he said, "I've ever had me fortune told, boy." He said, "And I've got a name." He said, "When you was in the fate," he said, "we christened you Gypsy Mead." He said, "If you remember, we had a name in the fate tent."
Yeah.
You know, the fortune telling tent.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's up there today. If you go by there, it's a big Rolls Royce garage. Well, it was the last time I passed there, 3 years ago.
Yeah.
And it's got a name right at the top. They call it the Gypsy Mead. They named it after it. He said, "I'll name the garage after you." He said, "You're telling me the truth."
Well, nice.
And you know, she, yes, she has told, you know, she's very psychic. And she's, what do you call these people? What can correspond with the other side?
Medium.
She's, well, she's like a medium. I never forget one, I think I was about 17 or 18. We stood down, I think it was Devonshire then, we was in Devonshire. And we all went to bed. And I was in my usual place under the caravan, you know, the out flights. And I heard such a commotion. Mother jumped up. She said, "Bill, Bill." She said, "I've just seen your Rosanna," she said. "That is me dad's brother's, me dad's brother's daughter. Me Uncle Joe's daughter," she said. She was going like that in front of me, waving about in front over the bed. Of course, my dad, you know, he's not a believer in anything. "Go to sleep, you silly cow." So, she said, "I did." And he wrote. They had a few words and everybody went to sleep. About 10 o'clock next morning, we were just yoking up, go away. I was fetching some ponies up, and brother was harnessing one, and dad was harnessing another one. And up come a telegram boy. Because we'd been there a week or two, and corresponding, you know, mother, good scholar she is now, write to one another. And a telegram came, and he said, sorry to inform you that your brother's girl has drowned herself. And she was a champion swimmer, and she had a row with her dad and mum, and went and jumped in the pond. And as she jumped in this pond, her feet got caught in some bed springs, things at the bottom, and she was standing up, drowning. And as she was waving like that, that's how she see her in the bed.
Wow.
Yeah, and she see her own father. Her father died in Manchester, and he was in a, you know, these little old street houses he had them years ago in Manchester. I don't know about now, I ain't been there so long. Just have a little street of houses.
Yes.
You go in the front door, there's just a passage going right through the back. There was the front room on one side, and then perhaps the parlour room on the right, and down the bottom the scullery and the kitchen.
Yes.
And a little backyard with a little wall. Well, yeah. I can remember going in there and seeing my granny and granddad. And we stood at Evesham in Worcestershire, just against Pershore. And we had a letter coming saying that granddad was on his way out. Anyway, mum never went, but he died the next day, so she's, well, got to go down and bury him. And my oldest brother, what's at home with now, Nephi, he had his suit. Well, he's the best suit he's wear. And they buried him. And the next day, my granny had died, like, isn't it the last one?
Yeah.
And the next day, she was in this here little, she went down the passage, this little room, she was in this little room, wrapping his suit up, to fetch back to me brother, in the boots and things. And she heard her father's footsteps coming down the passageway. Mm. And he opened the door, and he come in, and she see him standing in the suit, which she'd wrapped up and parceled up. Standing there looking at her.
Okay.
Yeah. And if she goes anywhere now and has anything like that, she'll tell you.
Mm.
You know, she's ever so like that now. I don't know that gift she's got or what it is, but you know, it's real spooky like the big world sometimes.
Yeah.
Has she ever told your fortune?
No, I wouldn't have it told.
No,
we wouldn't bother, you know, like the families.
Yeah.
No.
But she's if you know, if you went to her now, you could have a real good chat with her.
Mm. Yeah. And at 95?
She's at 95 now, and she can talk a little better sense than what I do.
Yeah. Marvellous.
You know, everybody goes in there now and says, well, don't she talk in the memory? Can't she think back and talk? She's got a big picture of all of us, well, most of the family. She's had it enlarged, as big as that, and she's got it again a bit. And if anybody comes there, strange, you go there. She said, they are. That's the times I'm talking about. A baby on her knee, she sits, she's got a pipe, she sits on a chair in the caravan with me on her knee. I'll be about 3 months old, and my brother Joe standing here. Then another one. and a lot this side, what the side of the big caravan I told your dad give £20 for. And we had it for 20 years.
They made well, aren't they?
Yeah, it was well when we sold it. We come over in Norfolk here before we had a caravan, and I was not home, I got married. And a lady on a farm craved their eyes out for it, and she gave them £100 and a trailing caravan for the motor. So they bought an old motor and sold the horses,
yeah.
And one of the brothers drove, and that was the end of it.
Yeah, that was the end of the horses.
At the end of the horses. Never had them since. I still like them.
Yeah.
But trouble is now, there's no grazing for them.
No.
It'd be, well, I don't know how this odds about, but it'd be terrible on the road, but it must be.
Yes.
Yeah. I hear you've got a story about haunting to tell us.
Yeah. That was when we were travelling, we travelled down, I think it was in Staffordshire, as we went down north again. And there's a lane there, they call it the Grinning Woman Lane. Have you ever heard of it?
No.
Well, Dad used to tell us about it. But she'd only come to one. She wouldn't come to two. Now, Dad used to tell us a story, and we wouldn't be on our own when we were there, but he told us a story about the old gypsy man and his woman, and they had one son. And they drawed her in this lane. They couldn't make it out. The grass was about foot high, sweet, lovely for the horses, tons of it, you know, nice wide lane. They said, we'll have the night here. So they drawed the caravan off, put the horse out to grass here, you know, lovely. So there was loads of little grass fields down this lane. So this old man said, well, he said, I ain't going to sit up with this horse all night. This like that, he said, in this lane. And the old boy used to sleep like I did, with the sheep round under the caravan. So it come about 11 o'clock at night, he said, I'll puff that grey. That's in Romany, you see, I'll put the horse in the field. So he went and put his horse in the field, and the old boy did, and said, good night, Mum and Dad, up the caravan, got under his old bed, and ooh, it must have been about midnight. He heard the sheep rattle. And he got this girl, is he said. And the sheep lifted up, and a young woman looked in at him, smashing young woman, smiled at him, lovely, you know. I was all right, Lord, you know, he looked at her, and then she turned to a grin. And she scared him so much, you know, he hit his head on the lock, and he went out this here sheep. He went out this here sheep and run up the caravan. Dad, he said. He said, a woman's coming, he said, terrible, he said at me, he said, under the caravan. God, I said, you silly so-and-so, you know, to him. And no, he wouldn't go out. He sat up there, he lit the candle, and he sat there, and he wouldn't move. And it would be about 2 or 3 in the morning. He had voices. So he had to peek through the caravan window there, and he said, it's the policeman and the keeper. So he said, as the day are, we've all your bloody doors now. We've got to get out, he said, and got the horse down the field down. And we said, we've had it. So he come out, he said, surely, he said, you ain't come to shifters this time of night, are you, sir? No, he said, I'm surprised you being here. His boy. He said, don't you know the legend this lane's haunted? He said, no, he said, my silly son reckon it is. He said, he was out there, he said, letting a woman, young woman, grinning at him. He said, he's telling the truth. He said, do you know, he said, I'm walking through here now, the keeper's on his rounds. And this lane was in between two roads. You're on one, you walk through and you come onto another one. And that was this keeper's walk for the poachers at night.
Yes.
And he said, I'll walk at the side. He said, she's walked at the side on him until she's nearly drove him mad. From one end to the other, he said, he can't stick it. In of us two, she won't appear.
Unusual.
Yeah. So he said, hold them. He said, you'll be all right. And he said, if I thought this grass were too good to be true, he said, in this lane.
Yeah,
that's
why. Yeah, true story today, that is down there. That's just in the borders of Staffordshire.